Just want to share a thought before I get into the lesson this morning. And if you want to go ahead and open up to 1 Kings chapter 18, we're going to look at a few verses there as we get into our lesson in just a few moments. But I want to let you know, adults, parents, if you have young people here in the congregation, if you know some that should be here and maybe aren't this morning, that next Sunday evening, evening 4 o'clock, we're going to meet at our house, and we're going to introduce a young man who's going to come and begin working with us, at least on the weekends, for our youth, Andrew Johnson. Some of you know him, or at least his family. He's from Nuwala. Their family I've known since, for many years. And Andrew's going to come and start working at least on the weekends with us for right now. He is a great, great young man, a wonderful family. And so we're going to welcome him, and parents of all ages, doesn't matter what your age of your children are, we would love for you to be at the house at our house next Sunday at 4 o'clock. That's a Sunday we're going to have no evening service, so we'll have a devotional time and kind of get to meet Andrew, and you can visit with him and share some things or ask him some questions or whatever you want to do with Andrew. So if you have children, please make plans to come over to the house at 4 o'clock next Sunday evening and spend the evening with us. We started this series about famous phrases. And today is one that comes from FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. His famous quote was from 1933 in his inaugural speech as he became the President of the United States. And he and one of his friends, Lewis McHenry Howe, are given the credit for coming up with this phrase as they were talking about this speech that he was going to be giving. And over a couple of days, they came up with this line, at least for his speech, and Roosevelt changed it a little bit, but he said this: "So, first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing that we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. The only thing that we have to fear is fear itself." And I think about those words, and I'm sure that you've heard them many, many times in your life, and people will quote that, and maybe not exactly the way he wrote it, but we'll quote those words. And what do they mean? I don't know exactly what his thought process was when they came up with those words. I don't think, however, that he was a man who just said some words to get some attention. I don't think he was just using those words so that people throughout history would quote those things. I think that he had an idea for this country. I think he had an idea of where he wanted to go with this country. World War II had not begun yet. But this country was in the middle of the Great Depression, one of the worst things in the history of our country. And he's looking ahead, and he's thinking about what this country is going to look like, what it could look like. And he's trying to encourage his country, the people that he's becoming the president of. He's trying to encourage them to realize that change can happen. It doesn't matter what's gone on to this point. What matters is from this day forward. What are we going to do? What can we do? And he's wanting to encourage them, I believe, to have strength and to not be afraid of change. Some things are going to have to change for our country to become better, to get out of the depression, to get out of those things that were affecting them. We have to change. Fear can be crippling to us. Fear can be crippling to anyone. A popular song right now in the world is "Fear, It Is a Liar." And the whole thought in that song is that very thing. Don't fall temptation to fear, because fear can destroy everything that you're about. If you'll allow fear to make you hide or step back or not do or not become or not change or not allow things to happen in your life, it can be crippling. Don't allow it to do that. So this morning, I just want to share a couple of thoughts with you about fear. Fear can both be positive, but overwhelmingly negative most of the time. Fear is one of those things that can be healthy and it can be a disease. Fear can be something that will bless our life or it will destroy our life. We have the choice what kind of fear. Fear can be a great hindrance. In 1 Kings chapter 18, this is a passage I believe that probably everyone, all of us know about this passage, at least know the Bible story that goes along with it. We're at a time when Elijah is the prophet. And Elijah is talking and he's in conversation with Ahab, the king. And Ahab is married to that wonderful lady who we all want to name our daughters after, right? Jezebel. I still haven't met anyone that's done that. I don't know why that's not a popular name. But anyway, we don't do that. And the story is surrounding these characters, if you will. And Elijah is trying to do one thing. He's trying to unite a kingdom. He's trying to bring all the people of Israel back to their God. He's trying to bring them back into this relationship that they've given up. And he uses some pretty harsh words to them. And he said, at some point in your life, you're going to have to choose who you're going to be and who you're going to follow. At some point, you're going to have to decide who you are. And so he's preaching, and he's not very welcomed. Ahab and he are not really good buddies. Ahab is looking for him everywhere and wants to end his life. Even though Elijah is really just trying to empower a king. Because if you look at the king, he too is filled with fear. And that fear has crippled him. Fear of basically his wife has caused him such great fear that he refuses to do what God anointed him to do. And that's be the king of Israel. And so they're not getting along. And Elijah keeps preaching, and Elijah keeps sharing, and he's not getting anywhere quickly. And finally, Elijah says, all right, this is what's going to happen. We're going to go to Mount Carmel, and we're going to lay everything out, and we're going to decide who is God. And you people are going to have to decide who's God. And so he calls for Ahab, and he said, here's what you need to do. You need to get all of your prophets together of Baal, and you need to bring them up, and we're going to have a competition. We're going to see who is God. And so 450 prophets of Baal come, and he says they also call 400 prophets of Asherah. I don't know if all of them are there or not, but that's who's called. And it says that they begin calling on Baal to come down and accept the sacrifice that they're offering. But no one can light the fire. No one's allowed to do that. There's the rules of engagement, if you will. And so they spend the entire day, you remember this, and they're calling out, and it says they're beating themselves and cutting themselves with knives, and they're doing all of these things, and emotionally they are giving everything that they are to this God that they're following. And nothing happens. And you remember Elijah, He's a little bit ornery, I guess, maybe we would think. And he's sitting over there and he's making fun of them the entire time. And he's telling them, you got to call a little louder. Maybe he's asleep or maybe he's all those other things that he says. Nothing happens. Then it gets to be his turn. And you remember, he builds the altar and he sets a sacrifice on it. And he covers it all with water. And he builds a trough and he fills the trough all the way around it. And I think that's the first time in history that someone puts a sacrificial altar in a swimming pool. But that's what he does. He says, I'm going to put a challenge that no one would ever even think of. And I'm going to let God show you who is God in Israel. And so he prays, and in chapter 18, in verse 36, he says, and at the time of offering of the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet came near, and he said, O Lord, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Israel. He's already acknowledging who he is. You are our God. You are the God that brought about our country and our people. You are where we find our identity. The God of Israel, Isaac, Abraham. Today let it be known that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and I have done all these things at your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their heart back to you. The challenge has been laid. Baal has failed miserably, and now it's God's turn to show them. Elijah is not going to be able to do anything, is he, without God? That's the whole point. God, we're dependent upon you. We are our people. Your people have always been dependent upon you. Show your people with an exclamation point today that you are God. He focuses on God. God, just be God. Be who you are today. Show them, all these people, who you are. And he begged of God to do that. And God, in this consuming fire, comes from heaven and he accepts the sacrifice that has been offered. And it says that he came down in that consuming fire and he took the sacrifice and the wood and the stones and he lapped up all of the water as well. Could Baal do that? No. Only God can do that. And Elijah knew that's all. The only one that could do that would be God himself. And so here it is. It's all offered. And you would think again, I know as many times as we've read this story, you think, Elijah is probably patting himself or thinking, man, what a great job. God did it, and he's taking care of everything that we've asked him to take care of. And he's smiling, and he's thinking, it has been accomplished. But what happens? Immediately, Jezebel hears about it and says, all right, guess what? The same thing that happened, because immediately upon God accepting that sacrifice, proving that he was God, all the prophets of Baal were put to death. They were false prophets. There was judgment, a consuming fire by God coming down and saying, I have passed judgment on these men. You must execute them and get rid of them. And so all of that happened. Jezebel is angry and she tells him, I'm going to do the same thing to you. You only have hours to live. I'm going to take your life. Now, I've had discussions with many people through the years, and I think I put myself in Elijah's shoes. You ever do that in a story? You kind of put yourself in the shoes and try to become that person, that character in that book that you're reading. And I try to put myself in Elijah's shoes to think, what would it have felt like to be in front of an entire nation trying to bring people's attention, especially as a preacher, bring all the people's attention to God and have an overwhelming where everyone there said, God is God, and fall on their face and begin worshiping. I would be successful. What a wonderful day. So I put myself in Elijah's shoes and I think, God finally gave that victory that I was looking for. And I'm going to stand up to this queen and say, bring it. Right? You think you're great, but guess what? God just defeated all of your prophets, every one of them. Nothing. Proved that they were false prophets, that they were liars, and there's no truth in them, and proved that God is God. But what does he do? He begins running. And he runs and he runs and he runs until he collapses and he just lays down under a tree and passes out. And an angel comes and wakes him up and feeds him. And he rolls over and passes out again. He is emotionally spent. And he feeds him again the next day. And then Elijah gets up and he begins running again. And he really runs a marathon now. 40 days all the way to Mount Horeb, God's mountain. Why is he running? Why did he run? He just had the greatest victory of his life. He asked and he prayed to God, and God answered his prayer, perfectly answered his prayer, and he still ran away. Why? Because fear is so consuming that it can destroy everything that we believe in. If we're afraid, we will hide. We will do whatever we can to not do whatever it is that scares us. there have been times I have been, and I don't know if fear is the right word, maybe smart in some of the things of not doing something, right? When someone challenges you to climb up in a tree 30 feet up in the air and jump out of the tree into a river, that's fear. I don't even like to be 30 feet in a tree, but I sure don't want to jump out of it. So we'd say, man, that's pretty smart. You shouldn't have done that. Maybe there's other things that we think about. A friend of mine that has a lion and wanted me to get in the pen with him to feed that lion. And I said, you're crazy. I'm not getting in there with that thing. He's 700 pounds and he can eat a whole deer in one sitting. What's he going to do with me? I'm not getting in there. I'm scared to death. There's fear. I'm not getting in there. Maybe we would say that kind of fear is good, but there's other fears that stopped me from saying things that I needed to say. There are other times in my life that fear has stopped me from being who I need to be. And Elijah is there. And so Elijah, all these days later, is hiding in a cave in chapter 19. And God comes to Elijah. And it's interesting that as God gets there, God begins talking to him. In verse 9, then came there to a cave and lodged there. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? Why are you hiding in a cave? Now, I think really God is saying to him, did I not answer everything that you asked of me? When you called on me and said, come down and prove who is God in Israel, didn't I answer that prayer? Didn't I answer that request? Didn't I answer to all the people? Didn't all their hearts, weren't all their hearts turned back to me? Didn't that happen? Elijah, why are you in this cave? Why are you hiding? Why are you hiding? And he says, well, God, did you hear what Jezebel said? Did you hear that they've put all to death all the prophets? And I'm the only one left. I've been faithful. I've done what I was supposed to do. But God, this is what happens. You see, God, we, you and I, have lost the fight. That's what he's saying. We've lost. You see, she's killed all the prophets, and all the hearts weren't turned back to you. He didn't stay long enough to really see what happened, did he? Because of fear. God, we've lost. In reality, what Elijah should have said was, we won. The fear that he should have felt was, God is the consuming fire. If you see a fire come from heaven and do exactly what you ask God to do, and it consumed the sacrifice that no one else can do, none of all the prophets of all these other gods, it doesn't matter, they can't do it, but God can do it. How many of you need any other kind of sign in your life that God is God? How many of us need anything else other than a God to prove once and for all before everyone that he and he alone is God? We shouldn't need anything else. But apparently Elijah did. A country experiencing the worst, the darkest times in its history. Here's a president incoming. Say, what? First of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. What was holding us back? And you take that example from a president and you take it into the kingdom of God and you repeat those same things. Isn't that basically what Elijah was saying to the people? We don't have anything to fear. God is our God. We don't have anything to fear but fear itself. all of those things, nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, why do we allow those things to grip us? Why do we allow those things to change us and tell us how to act and how to behave and how to live and how to focus our life? Why do we allow those things to happen? We shouldn't be there. We live in a nation today that does the same thing. We're paralyzed with fear, nameless, unreasoning, and unjustified. We no longer stand up for what is right. We no longer stand up with courage and commitment against what's wrong. We don't do it. We allow things to happen every day in this country because we're afraid of what someone is going to say. We have a congressman elected, publicly elected, in public, giving a speech that says, and the words that were used, openly Muslim person in an open session talking about encouraging Muslims not to assimilate in the United States. Don't assimilate. Don't take what this country is about. Don't make yourself in the middle of it or become part of it. Don't do that. But here is the, in her word, calculated ways Muslims must focus on converting all Americans to the Muslim faith. We have to destroy Christianity. We have to destroy all of those things. Now, that's a public official in our country. Is that any different than Jezebel? But yet, what would happen if someone stood up and said, here's a modern day Jezebel? Because she says, follow Baal and Asherah and these other gods, which is exactly what the Muslim faith does. And I'm not trying to attack the Muslim faith. That's not my point. What I'm saying is that has nothing to do with God. That has nothing to do with Christianity. And what happens is we become so fearful that instead of saying, no, there's only one God and there's only one word, God has only revealed himself one time in one book and that's it. Right here it is. It's not in the Quran. It's not in anything else. It's right here, period, with an exclamation point. And yet we're crippled with fear in this country because we won't say something about it. How horrible is that? So we have the opportunity to run and hide in a cave with fear, or we stand up and say, we fear the only God who actually exists. Did you pay attention to the passage that was read just a little bit ago? Matthew chapter 10. The Lord was talking and he's saying, don't be afraid of those who can destroy the body. You fear him who can destroy both body and soul for eternity in hell. The God who is a consuming God and a consuming fire that will come down and will take and will lap up the sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the water and everything else, the God and the only God who exists. You better learn to fear him and live according to how he created you, not any other idols. And any religious group that focuses on something like that, those are idols. Those are godless things. Now, the second thing fear can do is it can motivate, it can empower our motivation. If we see fear correctly, if we understand it, whether it's Noah building the ark, for 120 years, God says people are going to ridicule you. People are going to call you all kinds of names. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to do all of these things. But here's what I have for you to do. And he didn't. Because he was afraid of the one who said, one day there's a flood coming, and if you're not ready, you're going to be lost as well. Everything living on the face of this planet is going to die, and you have an opportunity to build an ark, a huge ship, and save all of the different species on this planet, if you choose. What are you going to fear, the people or God? Moses, Abraham, David, think of all the men of faith, and the ladies of faith too. They had opportunities to be afraid and run and hide in a cave or do what God called them, become who God called them to be. I love in Acts chapter 18, and we don't have time to go over and read this passage, but Paul is meeting Priscilla and Aquila, and he begins teaching on the Sabbath day and working with them building tents because that was what they've done. That's their vocation. And so he understands that he knows that he's doing this and he's working and earning some money so that he can go do this. And then Timothy and Silas come along. And it says once they get there, he has enough funds basically that he can do exactly what he's really wanting to do to start with, and that's to preach the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he said as soon as they get there, he begins doing this, focusing, giving all of his attention to doing exactly what he was about, and the fight begins. He and the Jews, people, his own people, people that he loves, hate him, despise him, to the point it says they begin blaspheming. Kind of a little like Peter at the trial of Christ, right? And he said, I don't know him, and cursing them. And so the Jews are doing this. And so I can't help but think how hurt Paul is. But it's interesting that God says, Paul, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. And yeah, it's easy to stop with, Paul, don't be afraid of those people because they're not going to hurt you. I have many people in this city and they'll protect you. They'll take care of you. But I really don't think that's what God is saying to Paul. I don't think that's the intention of what God is saying by don't be afraid. I think what the reality of what God is saying to Paul is this. Don't be afraid of being my child. Don't be afraid of being a Christian. Don't be afraid of being a part of the kingdom, of my kingdom. I will empower you. If you will not fear me, but will embrace me and love me, I will empower you. Don't be afraid of this world. Be afraid of the one who can send all to hell. And Paul is changing. Paul sees this and understands, and he begins teaching and he keeps on preaching. He's getting what the Lord talked to his disciples earlier. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of this world. Don't be afraid of someone taking your life. Be fearful of him, once again, who can take body and soul. Think about this as we close this morning. FDR's words, one more time. First of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing that we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror that paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. Would it be any less true if Paul, the Apostle Paul, were the one to write this to all Christians? Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. This morning, as you look at your life and understand fear can be crippling, I know that. I know fear can cripple us, but fear can also motivate. Fear can guide us in the direction that we need. And if there is something, some unreasoning terror, fear in your life of being a child of God, what is it? What fear do you have that's keeping you back, that's holding you back from being the man or the woman God created you to be? Don't let that unjustified fear or terror stop you from being who God has empowered you to be. What an amazing God we have. How powerful and majestic He is, willing to give us every single victory in our life that matters. And it's our choice. It's your choice. So if there is something that's holding you back some kind of fear in your life, don't allow it to grip you and stop you from being who God wants you to be. And so this morning, if you want us to stop right now and pray with you and ask God to empower you to strengthen your life, He said He'll do it. What better time than with your family to go before His throne and ask Him those things for you? So if you need that this morning, we would love to stop and pray with you this morning. But if you haven't begun that life, if you haven't named Christ as the Lord of your life, you can't be there. Fear is still gripping you and saying, nah, you don't need to do that yet. You don't need to be a child of God yet. It's okay, you still have time. You don't need to make that commitment yet. That's fear. That's the fear from Satan and all those ugly things in this world, not a healthy fear of God. One day we will go before God, like it or not. Every knee will bow before Him. The difference is, to His children, He will say, well done, welcome home. Are you ready to hear those words? If you haven't been immersed into Christ, you're not ready for that. And so if you need to make that decision today, right now is the time you need to make it. So if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, why don't you do it while we stand and we sing together.